You're listening to an encore presentation of Faith and Family. Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is the season of Lent in the church year, and how do you talk about that at home? How do you teach your children about it? How do you observe it as a family? I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. Find out more about them on our website. Go to kfuo.org. Look for the sponsor section. There you can find the CUW logo, and click on that. Find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin. Joining me in studio today, Kelly Schumacher, liturgical artist with Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts. Kelly, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you in studio today and talking about Lent and children, liturgical art. What is liturgical art?
Liturgical art is art that is meant to supplement the liturgy. So it's based on the Bible, it's based on sacrament, it's inspired by scripture readings, music, sacred music, and it's meant to be beautiful and representational. That's emphasis that I add, something that represents the objective world and Christ coming into the flesh.
And you have I've seen some of the work you've brought in, some of your work to share with us here at KFUO, and it always does convey that. It conveys Christ coming into the world for us and done so beautifully. How do you do that with Lent? What are some of the things that you love about Lent when it comes to liturgical art?
Well, a lot of times, that was one reason I got into liturgical art was when I would go to museums or visit different churches, I noticed that the Passion was often represented in the form of a Stations of the Cross in a Catholic church or an altarpiece inside of a museum. And liturgical art was a way to pretty much illustrate the Passion narrative primarily. That was the most common subject matter. So it totally ties in with the Lenten season.
What did you learn about, or how did you learn about Lent as a child?
Well, we went to church every Sunday growing up, and we also, I don't remember going to midweek services when I was really young because we moved around, but I remember when we moved to St. Louis, we would go to midweek services, we would go to Lenten dinners, and I think I almost took it for granted, but as I've gotten older, I've become more invested in the songs and in the readings. And what was neat is about 2 years ago, my dad and I went on an almost like Lenten adventure where we were in New York for Ash Wednesday and went to a different service there. It wasn't Lutheran. We went to a Passion play. We went to Trinity and Soulard, and they actually had another Passion play. So we were taking our traditions, but kind of trying to make things more alive and more exciting and more artistic with viewing performances instead of just sitting through a service.
So taking it all in, really taking in a lot. Some have a tradition of giving up something during Lent. It sounds like you took up instead of giving up something.
Yeah. I mean, you can give up, but then you always get stuck in like, I want to give up desserts or something.
Right.
And it's kind of like, oh, that's not quite. But yeah, being, I think, proactive is a little bit more creative, I guess.
Taking up something for Lent to help you learn more, to help you observe, and to focus on that penitential season and what Christ has done for us. And so you mentioned you went to a Passion play and things like that. What did you gain from taking up those things?
Well, it made everything more alive and more real. And I actually started going to the Passion play because I'd always wanted to go. And it was funny, in art school, when I was doing an altarpiece, I would talk to all sorts of different people, and one of the models said, you know, you should go to one of these reenactments. People actually draw at these reenactments, and you can make art from that. So I went to one as a dress rehearsal, and I photographed the people performing this passion play, and free models. They let me do it. But I like seeing the different interpretations in the live action, and you know, how do other people visualize these stories?
Sure. And that's certainly appropriate for Lent in helping you depict the story or the text that that we study during Lent, during this penitential season. What are other things? So it sounds like that's one thing that certainly helped inspire you as an artist for that season of Lent. Are there other things? You mentioned passion play, attending services. Are there other things that that help inspire you as an artist, give you inspiration, ideas?
Oh my goodness. So many. I mean, we've talked about music and light. We've talked about film. What's interesting about going, when I was living in Philadelphia, I had to actually travel about an hour or so to get to church every Sunday, and it was kind of dangerous. So if I was traveling if I had to go to church in the evening, I wouldn't go. I would go to a different church, and they had the Philadelphia Cathedral. And I remember attending a Good Friday service one year, and they had this body of Christ on the cross, and people were going around and kissing it, and it was this huge space, and there's incense, and it was just, I mean, the place is huge, full of art, mosaics, beautiful marble floors. You were vested out, there was chanting, and it was just high church to the max. And another reason I do liturgical art is because I don't want to just have art in the church. I want high church that is just so, where you almost have an out-of-body experience in the presence of God, and you are in the throne room of grace. You almost are like, is there an angel flying past me or something? I mean, you're just so, so consumed. And that is a big inspiration for me, is what can I create that is going to simulate and give image to that unseen reality and make it visible?
What then, when we think of children and art, sometimes we think, okay, paper plates and glue and craft sticks. When you think of children and art, what comes to mind?
There is no shame in paper plates and craft sticks. No, but seriously, whatever. I mean, you know, two-dimensional, three-dimensional, in working with paper plates, the children might be able to make something more three-dimensional, such as an angel or something, by how they fold it. So you can work, you know, two-dimensionally or spatially. When I teach art for children now, I want to try to figure out, you know, what seems to be driving them. But I noticed a lot of times what I'm working on and meditating on and thinking about translates straight into the classroom. So, which I didn't realize that on a conscious level, but subconsciously I'm doing it. But with children, I really like to play with the idea of story. And I want them to, you know, either take a familiar story or something or a Bible passage, and then we try to figure out how to visualize and illustrate it. And so they are forced, which is a very difficult thing if you think about it. But at the same time, children, their minds are so, so plastic and malleable, and they can make all sorts of fun connections that we're like, no, it's like this. And they're like, well, why not this? And they see possibilities instead of pinning things down. And I really want to keep that very creative spirit where they're forced to, you know, come up with, not forced, but they need to generate a lot of different ideas and possibilities, and they visualize. And then the second part that I like to focus on is technical ability, is what can we do to make this look lifelike? How do we use shading, or how do we use hatching, colors? What are our materials? How do we make this look realistic? And, you know, and that's a very big thing to get to, but I start, you know, them thinking in that way through shapes, lines, and colors. That's really the building blocks to make something look representational in the future.
Now, my son is 2.5.
Yay!
He's identifying shapes. He's learned to identify shapes very well. And I'm quite pleased with that. Even things like oval and diamond. I was happy with squares and rectangles and triangles and circles. He had all those, but he's starting to identify all kinds of shapes and lots of colors now. Wow. As well. At what age, the younger children, what's appropriate in terms of art for them and teaching these, the Lenten text, the Lenten message, and older children, elementary school, first, second, third grade, those intermediate grades, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, what's appropriate at each level? What's the youngest child you work with in terms of art?
Oh my goodness. Well, I've only worked with a few children, mm-hmm. and then I've taught college. But what I've babysat and done a lot of childcare. So, I mean, I guess I would know a little bit. But I think, the younger they are, the more you are going to point, mm-hmm. and the more you are going to, and you focus on, objects, or you just talk to them visually, sure. You describe things. You can use stencils. I mean, I loved stencils, mm-hmm. as a kid. I would go crazy over these stencils because I couldn't draw like a bunch of grapes or mm-hmm. a turkey or a horse yet, but I could trace it and I could make a story just by tracing. You could sit there, your son, mm-hmm. you're at the grocery store. You'd be like, look at these grapes. These grapes are made of, mm-hmm. Look at the ovals. Do you see grapes in church? Where do you see grapes? And you can just start telling mm-hmm. him the stories behind an object, or you see a cup. Well, look at the cup at the communion mm-hmm. rail. Mommy and daddy can drink from it, but you can't drink from it yet. Why? Asking those questions, or bread, something as simple as a loaf of bread, mm-hmm. And looking at those objects. And then, you can show them, and this is more like the teaching verbal side versus the technical side. But then you go in and you say, you look at a painting and you have Jesus breaking bread, and you say, why is Jesus breaking this bread? Why is he breaking this cup? Have you seen something like mm-hmm. this before?
Sure.
This is on the altar. And you can start to weave these symbols, mm-hmm. and not just symbols that are 2D, but symbols that are objects in everyday life. And even with bread, I remember reading this years ago when I was trying to learn how to paint skin. Someone, an oil painter, said the way to learn how to paint realistic flesh is to paint bread. And that always stuck
wow.
with me. I don't, how deep is that? That the bread... And I'm like, oh my goodness, like bread is so, wow, that is so sacramental without even trying to be. So there's a lot of different things. And, when a child asks a question, be open to answering. But then if you're, mm-hmm. then you even ask, what do you think? Well, why would Jesus say this? Or, the miracle of the loaves and the fish, mm-hmm. be like, well, the loaves and the fish, like, why are fish important? When do fish show up? So I would say start with shapes, play with symbols. I did teach design. I did teach design for a while, and we talked a lot about symbols and mm-hmm. looking at symbols and the meaning within symbols. So what I would almost start with is like lines, shapes, and then moving those lines and shapes to create symbols. And then once you have your symbols, then you understand your meaning with your symbols. And then once you understand your symbols and your meaning, then you can graduate to narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I would progress it.
We've been using a Church Words picture book. Concordia Publishing House has a Church Words
oh, cool.
picture book. And we've been using that at church, at home and at church, helping him identify things that he sees in church, the things I see in church, pews and Bible and those types of things, and pastor and singing and all those things. And so he's been using that, and he knows what each picture is in the book now. So now we're starting to identify them when we see them at church.
Perfect.
And now we use, this is really funny, a miniature magnadoodle.
No, that's great.
So that we draw some of those things, some of the symbols last Sunday, we had Holy Communion. So on the Magna Doodle, I drew a chalice and the wafer, the bread, on the Magna Doodle before we went up to Holy Communion. And as he was going with us, he wasn't communing, but goes up for a blessing. But I was drawing this before we went up, and my wife and I were, you know, pointing out that that's what this is. That's what we're going up to, is the Lord's Supper. And so even a Magna Doodle, as fuzzy as it is, we were able to draw some symbols on it there in the service, and it also keeps him engaged.
Sounds like you're doing great to me.
So, well, Magna Doodle probably wouldn't qualify as liturgical art, but...
Oh, I was obsessed with wine. I totally was. There is, I mean, whatever gets the creative juices flowing, mm-hmm. I mean, when I was trying to figure out how to do multi-figure compositions, I would be cutting out printed things and, you know, and using tape. And I'm going, this is like a felt graph. This is so not sophisticated. But then I realized, like, you know, whatever it takes to make it work, mm-hmm. that's okay. I mean, even with children, like, I use models and props. I mean, it's really dress up mm-hmm. that I'm doing. And it's kind of funny because it's really not that different from what you do as a child.
Sure.
So, but I think as a child, you just do it because it just works. But mm-hmm. as you get older, the meaning and the depth is always what's going to be, you're going to revisit and understand it even more each time.
Sure, sure. I saw an interesting photo the other day of children playing dress up, and they were playing church.
Oh.
They were dressed up one was dressed up as the pastor. He was playing pastor at church. It was quite interesting. It was funny. He even had the liturgical colors on, the appropriate liturgical colors. So really at any age, mm-hmm. As children are learning to communicate, learning to identify, and learning to express, we can really use these a variety of things to teach them about Lent, about the church year as a whole as well, using, I'm glad you pointed out, shapes and then symbols and lines and things like that. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned you loved stencils as a child. I think what we need is a set of liturgical symbols, stencils. Can you develop those? Would you create those?
I have no idea how.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That would. And you could have like little Bible characters, and then they can make their own like little stories. And yeah,
but all the symbols of the church year too.
All
the symbols of the church year in stencils.
Some of them are complicated.
True. True.
Yeah.
But you could do some, wouldn't that be fun?
That would be fun. I do have a little liturgical symbols handbook.
Make them into stencils. Yeah. I'll be your first customer.
Okay. Just have to figure out the cutting and plat. Maybe I need a 3D printer then in order to make them work.
Is it amazing how technology has changed over time? And how does technology support your work? How does it help you do your work? How has it changed over time and support you doing your work as a liturgical artist?
That's a great question. I used to be very anti-technology and very like, it all messes everything up. But some things that I do are, I do a lot of photography. Mm-hmm. And I take the photos into my computer, and I've started to change the lighting on things mm-hmm. and really play with the colors. If I want things more blue, if I want things more gray. And you're not just limited to a printout and imagining. Mm-hmm. I can actually control the colors. I've started with my very weak computer skills, taking different images and instead of cutting them out by hand, cutting them out on the computer and then developing different scenes and different compositions instead of just mm-hmm. making it up and sketching it. I can actually make a full project mm-hmm. And work from that. My camera, obviously, my computer.
Sure.
But I also try to work, I do work from life depending on what I need, but I've noticed that it's just not very practical to have people sit out forever because my work takes so long to make and it's not very cost effective. And I find that with the tools that I have, I can get a lot of detail and keep the cost relatively, mm-hmm. relatively low. And even my, I've started doing this more, my camera phone.
Sure.
You know, when I'm out and I see something that's interesting, I don't have to carry my big camera everywhere anymore. And it's really nice to be able, I mean, those little things that artists didn't have access to the past. And I mean, I can even, you know, even technology mm-hmm. to be able to travel. Well, you have more access to more scenes, more props, more everything. Mm-hmm. And even though a lot of times in the past, the work was very good, you just didn't have as much access as we have now. And even on the computer, I can look up almost anything.
Mm-hmm. We have access to all kinds of ideas and images virtually unlimited. Mm-hmm. With, as you pointed out, with having a mobile phone that has a pretty decent camera on it today compared to what they were just, you know, 10 years ago. The fact that you can capture an image on your phone anywhere you are, I mean, usually you would have a mobile phone with you and capture an image. Or, as you pointed out, with access to the internet, I mean, you can find research and find anything on the internet today, right?
Yes, anything.
Yeah, so technology certainly has impacted how we go about art, I'm sure, how we go about just about anything in life, but certainly how we go about art. What about art with children? What are some of the basic things that you teach them? And do you use technology at all when teaching children about art?
I do. I do use some technology. We look at, if we have a project, mm-hmm. what I encourage them to do is to, I love Pinterest, actually. I find really interesting mm-hmm. art pieces on there. And you don't normally have to be afraid of kids popping up something that they shouldn't pop up as much. I mean, you always have to be a little bit guarded on that.
Always want to use safety on
the internet. Yeah, but like Pinterest, if you look up...
It's a little bit tamer than other places.
Yeah, it is. And I've just noticed I can find a lot more interesting things that I would not be able to find on Google or mm-hmm. Yahoo necessarily. And then how I go about teaching children... It so much depends on the child, but one student I started with drawing, and then we got into just painting still lifes every week, one or two still lifes every week and some landscapes. And she really seemed into that. A different student, I asked if she wanted to do painting or drawing. She seemed more to gravitate toward drawing. And then we went through, I had this book on portraiture, and we just went through the different parts of the face. We went to the eye, we went mm-hmm. to the nose, went to the lips. We were working on the planes of the face and just breaking down the simpler shapes. A different student, the first project we did was a nativity scene. We had to draw a nativity mm-hmm. scene and take a bunch of, I took a bunch of photographs, and we had to come up with a nativity scene, putting all those photos together, and she had to draw that. Then we did an illuminated manuscript page, and she had to pick out a verse from the Bible and research some images to mm-hmm. come together and make an image. I'm not repeating projects. I'm more just kind of like whatever seems to make sense to me at the time. And then we did a bunch of bananas with a 7-step layered glazing process where she learned how to grid from a photograph. And she did great. I was impressed. She had to learn how to do that and then do different layers of glazes and understand optical blending through layering versus directly mixing. And I know these things sound very complicated, but they're really not. But we take it slow.
But children can learn these things. They're sponges. They can absorb and learn these things very well. I remember, as an elementary student, we were very fortunate that we had a college professor who taught our elementary art courses. So I got to learn some really neat things as a child too, and when it comes to art. Well, Kelly, we are just about out of time, but I want to make sure that folks can find out more about you and your work and Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts. The website, is that a good place to go find
more? Sure. Agnus Dei Arts, agnusdeiarts.com. I'm also on Facebook. You just look up Agnus Dei Arts or Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts.
Well, thanks so much for sharing with us about liturgical art and children and Lent. God's blessings on this penitential season, this Lenten season, and look forward to having you back in the future.
Thank you, Andy.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Being a full-time pro-life advocate has its ups and downs, but pro-lifers in France have it worse in an increasingly hostile environment. The legislature just passed a law targeting pro-lifers with blatant government censorship. The operators of pro-life websites could face 2 years in jail and a 30,000 euro fine if they post misleading information that discourages women from having an abortion. The definition of misleading is the key. Basically, it means any effective communication that counters the abortion industry in France. It's particularly ironic because a government website reads, "There are no physical or psychological after effects from abortion." These are outright lies, but those in power make the rules. Please pray for our pro-life colleagues in France.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson with an invitation for you to join me over the weekday noon hour for Moments of Assurance, your lunchtime spiritual recipe. You'll enjoy encouraging scriptures, a bit of Bible history and trivia, news items, humor, the kids' corner, and more, all mixed in with faith-strengthening sacred music, a blend just right for your midday hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance over the weekday noontime hour here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
Wednesday on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery about religious persecution in China and a scientific theory that religion was key to humans' social evolution. We'll also look forward to Sunday morning, the first Sunday in Lent, talking with Dr. Carl Fikencher about the temptation of Jesus.
Issues Etc., live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
Trusted, blessed, assurance, delivered, Lutheran. Adored, unique, sacred, solid.
Those are a few of the words that describe Worldwide KFUO. You can trust KFUO to proclaim the gospel message clearly, distinctively, biblically. In a world of lies, KFUO is all about the truth. Listen daily and you'll hear Christ-focused programs you can trust. We're the messenger of good news. Worldwide KFUO.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? Cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times, 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
KFUO, the messenger of good news. God said to the serpent, "I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head, and ye shall bruise his heel." Worldwide, KFUO at KFUO.org.
You're listening listening to Faith and Family. I'm Sarah Golseth. One of my absolute favorite things to do on Faith and Family is to bring you stories from our missionaries. It's always such a joy to hear how these wonderful people are sharing the gospel message around the world, and as with our story today, how they're supporting our brothers and sisters in Christ around the world. My guest today is Georgia Witt, who is the librarian at the Matongo Lutheran Theological College in Western Kenya. She has some fascinating stories to share about this library and the life at the college. Welcome, Georgia.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being my guest and for sharing your story with us. So tell me a little bit about your background and what led up to becoming a missionary.
Well, when I was a teacher out of college, and my sister Arlene was a missionary in Colombia for many, many years. And I had wanted to go to Colombia. And at that time I was with the old ALC. Mm-hmm. And the head of mission would visit my church and tell me, we need a teacher in Cameroon, Africa. And I would say, I don't want to go to Cameroon. I want to go to Colombia, where my sister is. And actually, I did find a way to go and teach at an international school there on my own. Came home, and he was back asking me again. I met finally, after three times, met with the board and told them, I don't want to go to Cameroon, I want to go to Colombia, thinking they would never call me, but they did. And I sat down to write a refusal and ended up writing an acceptance, and I went to Cameroon to serve. And came home to my parents were getting up in years, and my sisters were married, and met my husband, was married, lived in Texas. He passed away in 2011. And I moved to Missouri to be near my stepdaughter and my grandchildren, and joined Christ Lutheran in Platte Woods, where I met Jacob Gaugert, a missionary going to Togo. And after that, on my Facebook page for 2 weeks, top of the news feed, it said, we need teachers in Africa. And I thought, Lord, you're trying to tell me something. And I applied, and they noticed I was also a certified librarian. And they said, we need a librarian in Kenya. And I learned my lesson. I didn't refuse. I said yes the first time.
Did you ever think that your experience as a librarian would lend itself to missionary service?
No, actually, I didn't. I was applying to be a teacher to go back to my teaching career. I had no idea that I would be needed as a librarian. And I taught everything pre-K, and I was a district library director, so I've had pre-K through high school students. But the last thing I ever dreamed of is I would be at a college as a librarian there.
Sure.
That's how God works.
It's amazing how he works, yes. Isn't it? So tell me a little bit about where you work then in Kenya at the Matongo Lutheran Theological College.
Okay. It's a very rural setting where the elevation, you can feel it when you're driving there. You're going up. And so the weather is perfect for me. The climate is very nice. Cool in the morning, cool in the evening, nice during the day. They do have the short rains and long rain season. But it seems, since I've been there anyhow, it's only rained in the afternoon and evening, which is fine. And I live on the campus in an apartment at the bottom of a stairway that leads up. There's like three staircases and an incline that go up toward the library. And the library's brand new. It was built by the Chemnitz Library Initiative through Concordia Lutheran Seminary in Fort Wayne. And Reverend Rothemeyer headed that up. So it's a lovely new facility, two floors. And our goal was to have over 10,000 volumes so we could qualify to become a university and issue our own degrees and not have to work through another university. And I cataloged that before I left, the 10,373rd book.
Wow. That is a lot of books.
Yes, there's a lot of books. A lot have been kind donations from retired pastors, from churches, from Concordia Publishing, and we recently received just a wonderful set from Concordia of the new commentaries.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I know one of the professors said, these are like gold.
How much do the students love when they see the new books in the library?
Very much. They're very excited. It's the one place, because they have small little rooms, very dim, only one light. And so the library is like all windows around on three sides. So it's very bright, even so when their electricity is off, which happens frequently, and there are no lights, it's still bright enough for them to see. And they like being in there. I know Pastor Joshua talked to some of the students yesterday, and they said, "We need you back here."
That's wonderful. Now, does the library also double as a place for other activities on the campus?
Yes, it has a classroom at the end of it. It's kind of an L at the one end, and so the smaller bachelor's classes are there. So I feel very blessed because I get to listen in and feel like I'm getting a theological education on in symbolics or dogmatics or whatever is being taught down there. I get to kind of audit the class.
Right. Now let's go back a little bit to when you first arrived on the campus and you first walked into the library. Tell me what you saw.
I walked into the library and I saw table after table of books that were just piled in like round heaps in no order whatsoever, just thrown on these tables up to the ceiling almost. It was a little bit of a shock. Pastor Joshua said that my eyes got like saucers. They got really big. My mouth dropped open.
Right. I mean, that's an overwhelming thing to walk into and see and have to think through how you're going to approach that big of a project.
Yes, it was. And I said it was, I was a school librarian and a public librarian, but not a theological librarian. So I was unaware of, I'd never paid any attention. I knew the 200s are religion, but I never really paid close attention. And I remember dragging this one little table over, well, not real little, but it was one table. And I told Joshua, I said, "Now we'll put the 230s on this table." And he just roared. He said, "But Mama," they all call me Mama. Mama, the 230s, that's almost the whole collection.
They aren't all going to fit on that little table,
that's
are they?
That's right. It was hilarious.
So how long did it take you to sort through the books that were there?
Actually, we really, the system went very well, and it took us a few months to get things sorted. And then we had a little problem with the floor cracked in the basement. So then we had to remove everything again so they could pour a new floor before our dedication the following semester. But then we did get everything back in after that. It took a significant, and we were still shifting and moving. Right before we came back, we had new shelving built for upstairs. And we shifted all the reference books upstairs.
Goodness.
So we could keep better track of them.
Yeah. Wow. Now, what kinds of new things have come into the library, like computers or tables, those kinds of things?
It's a real blessing that the former employer, Mama Fro's former employer, Prudential, donated some computers. And I think it was six. And so we have four in the library, one in my office, and one we're using as a server, you know, for the thing, so we can connect to the internet. With our other partners, LCMS and LEAF, we have internet now.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, when the electricity's on. We do have internet, and that's very nice for the students, including Wi-Fi. So if a student does have a computer that can hook up to Wi-Fi, they can connect and research online also. And our dream is to be fully connected with Concordia Seminary's library.
Oh, wonderful.
So that's a real dream also. At this point, I can get into theirs and find things for students myself.
All right.
But we're hoping in the future that our whole collection can be linked.
Yeah. So how important is this library to the students?
Well, that's their only access to the information and things they need, because they do have to write papers mm-hmm. and everything before their classes, and they don't have books of their own, mm-hmm. and they don't have the money to buy books.
Right.
So it's very, very important. In fact, since I've been here, I've had several writing to me. Mama Georgia, can you bring back this book for our fiction section even?
Oh.
You know, just things to read.
Yeah.
Could you bring back these two books? These would be good in this for this class. So they're even making suggestions on things that they think we need that we don't have.
That's great.
So I think that's one that tells me that they're really getting into the collection.
Sure, sure. So what is it like living on the campus so close to the library?
I laughed. They said something about having comp days and stuff. Well, like when you live there, if you're there, uh-huh. they feel free to come and or call you. You know, it's my day, it's Saturday or something. They'll come. They know I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll hear a knock at the door. You know, Mama, can you come up and find this for me?
Mm-hmm.
And the library's open. I mean, we are open on Saturday and Sunday in the evenings. We mm-hmm. have student librarians who man it. But if they can't find something, then mm-hmm. they feel very free to come to my apartment or get me or go to Pastor Joshua's quarters with them in the men's dormitory and get him.
Mm-hmm. That's great. What else do these students learn other than obviously the college is to prepare pastors, the teacher's college. But what other skills do these students learn while they're at the college?
Well, they learn administration also, mm-hmm. how to administer the church and organization. And we do have a program for deaconess mm-hmm. students. And those students are also taught pedagogics.
Mm-hmm.
So they're taught, how to teach and how to administer the Sunday school programs.
Sure.
And recently, through some donations, Jan Fro and Charlie brought money to buy some treadle sewing machines.
Wonderful.
And I have a gal who's my seamstress. They call them foondies. She's coming up and teaching them how to sew.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was amazed at how fast they were learning. She was, when I left, she'd only had four classes, and she was teaching them to make a skirt.
Wow.
I mean, they thought I was going to teach this class. Well, I haven't sewed since I was in Cameroon in the 70s, But I've never used a treadle.
Mm-hmm.
But that will give them a skill that when they go back to their village, they can make pyramids for the church, they can make the albs, the stoles,
sure.
they can actually use it as a skill to be a seamstress and to earn money, because they most of them do not get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the pastors and the deaconesses, they just serve for the love of spreading the gospel.
Sure. So there's the teacher's college. Now, the teacher's college, is that's a separate college?
It's a separate campus. They're mm-hmm. linked together. One is the teachers are on the upper campus.
Okay.
But they're right side by side. But the umbrella is called NAMA Lutheran College.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves Matongo Lutheran Theological College and Matongo Teachers Training College.
Mm-hmm. And how important is the library to that goal of becoming a university? And what does that mean to the students that are there?
Well, the students who are there, well, we're very close now. We have three professors who've graduated with doctorates.
Wonderful.
And we have the rest with masters, and we have an American professor who has his doctorate and another one with a master's.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the sufficient number, and we do have enough books in the library, and it's now organized the way they require it to be organized with an Africana section mm-hmm. and a Swahili section.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're hoping that very soon some of the other physical upgrades will be made. The internet was also a key component.
Okay.
So the fact that we are linked now to the internet, I think, is a very good sign about that also.
That's great.
So the goal is, to be NAMA Lutheran University.
Mm-hmm. And what would that name mean for the students?
It would mean that their degree would come from NAMA Lutheran University, not Daystar University in Nairobi.
And that would be very important.
Very important, because Daystar really has no meaning to them other than the fact that that's where they go and put on a robe and march across the stage and get their paper.
Because mm-hmm.
everything else is done in Matongo.
Right, right. And that's, Matongo is a very close-knit campus?
Yes, very close-knit. Everybody knows everybody. I laugh because I always say the professor who lives below me must hate it because he told somebody, Mama really gets up early in the morning because I'm an early riser. I'm up at 4:35 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So back to you and your life there. What mm-hmm. are some of your favorite things to do when you have free time?
Let's see. When I have free time, I like to go into Kisumu with my Finnish friends to go stay at Milimani with them, with Annalisa and Pavel. And I enjoy that. And we go out to eat there. And a favorite place, I love to go by Lake Victoria. Mm. Kisumu is right on Lake Victoria. And they have a wonderful restaurant called Kiboko Bay, where fresh tilapia caught right in out of the lake.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
So I love to go there to eat. That's where I go to do my shopping.
Mm-hmm.
I love to read, of course. I'm a librarian. I like to read. And I am the movie capital of Matongo. Oh. I never would buy a DVD in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Never. However, I did buy some used ones. I took them over, and some friends started sending me DVDs. So a favorite thing to people to do is come over, and I make popcorn, and we watch movies. And
so
one of my friends cleaned out their whole collection.
Oh, wow.
And so I have, like, the CD holders with DVD, filled with DVDs to take back.
Mm-hmm. That's so funny. What about children? Do you like to... you were talking about in your presentation yesterday at the International Center about teaching Sunday school and loving to teach children.
Yes, I kind of miss little ones because I'm now with the big people, right? College age, and a lot of the college students are older. Their parents, a lot. That's a great sacrifice. They come. The women have families at home, studying to be deaconesses.
Mm-hmm.
The men have families.
Mm-hmm.
So they come at great sacrifice, but we don't have any children on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the missionaries on our campus have children. So they, LEAF, the Lutheran Evangelical Association of Finland, they have a child care project, and they have orphanages, which is on the upper campus.
Sure.
So I can just walk right up to that orphanage when I need to be around some little children. And that's a lot of fun. And then on the weekends, sometimes I go to teach Sunday school at different congregations.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a lot of children time there. I feel like the Pied Piper sometimes.
And do they just sit there and soak it up?
Yes. They're amazing. I mean, they'll sit in the grass. It's outside.
Mm-hmm.
There are no tables, no supplies. I try to bring coloring sheets and crayons and things with me.
Sure.
But they just sit in the grass, and whatever you're talking about, they just, like, they hang on every word. It's the most, as a teacher, it's the most attentive group I've ever had in my life. And they're so fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of the cultural things that you had to get used to or things that you weren't expecting?
Let's see, a lot of it since I'd been in Cameroon, I did expect.
Mm-hmm.
But some of it is Kenyan time.
Oh.
Joshua's ordination was supposed to start at 10. When I went to his ordination, I think we started maybe at 11:20. And the time of length of time, people there, I mean, there's none of this 45-hour service.
Mm-hmm.
You go, his ordination started, and I was still there at 4:30.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, that involved. And you go to a funeral, it's a huge event. It's all kinds of food. And anybody who, they don't even have to know the person.
Mm-hmm.
And the family is obligated to feed everybody who comes. And these are people who are very poor, and
right.
they make less than a dollar a day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite, that was very, I hadn't seen that before, even in Cameroon.
Right.
That how expensive things are for them.
Oh, yeah.
And yet they're so generous. Mm-hmm. I said, if they only had a cup of rice, I know if I went to visit, they would cook that, and that's what they'd give me.
Wow. I know when we've talked to other missionaries who are based out of Nairobi, that was the same thing that they mentioned, mm-hmm. that this the sense of time in Kenya is that way. If you're visiting with somebody And you're still talking with them 3 hours later. That time is important. That relationship is important.
Yeah, the relationship is much more important. And, you know, as Americans, we're like task oriented. Mm-hmm. We have to get these tasks done. And dinner's at 5:30. You're there at 5:30. Mm-hmm. Well, if let's say I invite somebody for dinner and it's 5:30 and they don't come. Well, someone might have stopped that person or that pastor or deaconess mm-hmm. on the way and wanted to talk to them, and that relationship and what they were discussing was much more important mm-hmm. than being there at my house at 5:30 for dinner. So that was an adjustment, yeah. But I think I've gotten through that.
That seems like an adjustment that would be a good adjustment,
yes,
to focus more on the people around instead of always having to be, you know, somewhere at a specific time or else somebody's going to get angry at you.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of dinner, I hear you like to bake cakes. Is that true?
Yes, it is. Professor Bula joked. He said, we used to be, we only had cakes once in a while if it was somebody important's birthday. But now it seems to be somebody's birthday every week because Mama is baking a cake.
I don't see much wrong with that.
No. And Joshua's young little boy, who's 10, mm-hmm. he loves He always says, he calls me Baba, that's Kisi, that's Grandma in Kisi. And he said, tell Baba I need a cake. But the funny part is, you know how most children love the icing?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like the icing.
Oh, that's funny.
He just likes the cake. Mm-hmm. It's really cute.
What's your favorite African dish to cook?
Let's see. Well, I do know how to make ugali. Joshua's daughter, Mercy, said, Grandma, do you know how to make ugali? And I said, oh, yes. And she said, who taught you? I said, your dad. I don't make it well. The only thing I can really make well is sukumawiki.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like collard greens. And mm-hmm. you chop it up and then you kind of put it in fry. It's almost like a fry thing in a little oil. And tomatoes and onions and with some seasonings, some garlic and some things. And I can do that pretty well.
Sure. What is the food like in Kenya? Vegetables, meats?
Mostly vegetables. And it's a corn, a maize flour mm-hmm. that they mix into what they call ugali. Mm-hmm. It's like if you took hominy, mashed mm-hmm. up hominy into a bowl or something. And they form a bowl with it. And then they use that almost like a scoop. Mm-hmm. To pick up their food.
Sure.
And, of course, if they have Western guests, they give us spoons.
What do they eat with?
With their hands.
Huh?
When they have the ugali, yes.
So that would be something to get used to.
Yes, when it was. When I was at Joshua's ordination, I was sitting with his parents, and he came over. He said, how are you doing, Mama? I said, just fine. I'm eating. And he said, with your fingers, I see. And I said, when in Rome.
Oh, that's great.
And they did have a kisi vegetable. I want to say it was manogu. I can't think of it. I always forget what it's called. It's like moon something. Mm-hmm. But it was really good. Mm-hmm. Really good. But I can only enjoy that when Joshua's wife comes and she makes it.
So when you go to the village or you need to go to a church to do Sunday school when they invite you along, what's the transportation like?
Well, you get a driver
mm-hmm.
who drives you there,
mm-hmm.
and then you get there, and then sometimes it's easy. You just walk across and go to the church. Sometimes it's not so easy, like when I went to St. Deborah.
What happened to St. Deborah?
They hadn't told me it involved rock climbing,
oh, no.
mountain climbing, and I looked down, and it's down a hill, but mm-hmm. the hill, it's all rocks, and I had heels on.
Oh, no.
I was not dressed for this. So Pastor Joshua and my driver, Joseph, had to assist me, one carrying my purse, one carrying my laptop that I had a story on for the children. And they had to help me down the thing. But it really humbles you when you know that you're meeting African women
mm-hmm.
who are as old as I am carrying water up and down those rocks on their head.
Sure.
But I did make it all the way down.
Well, that's good.
And all the way back up.
Right, exactly. Well, we are quickly running out of time.
Oh,
we have about
so
I know. We have about a minute left. What is your hope for the library? What do you hope to see in a couple of years or down the road?
I'm praying that I'll see the students maybe using it more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm praying that Pastor Joshua will also be a certified librarian.
Oh. Is that something he wants to do?
Yes, he loves books. I can't send him to shelve books, but he never comes right back. And I know if I walk down the stairs, he's standing there reading the books he's shelving.
Oh, no.
Because he's a voracious reader. That so that they will have, because the current Kenyan librarian is probably nearing retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be good to have a young one. And they need a theological librarian.
Sure.
Which I am not.
Right.
Because I count on him to assist the students with their theology papers.
Sure. Sure.
So that's kind of my dream for that, and that we will be connected to Concordia Seminary in Fort Wayne.
That's great. So to learn more about Georgia and her story and church in Kenya, you can go to lcms.org/wit. That's WITT. And my guest today is Georgia Witt, librarian at the Matongo Lutheran Theological College in Western Kenya. Thank you so much for being my guest.
And thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.